Hey everyone, and welcome to My Crazy Divorce. I'm this week's host, Jill Blankenship. So many of you have asked to hear Tom's crazy divorce story, but he thought it would be weird to interview himself, so he asked me to host this week's show.
I'm a failure as a husband, I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good, oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips, my imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Some of you already know Tom's story from TikTok or from his writing on the OurDivorce.com blog, but you've never heard it like this. The real story starts in 2002. And since I met Tom in 2005, I was a witness to most of this, so I'll try and share some of my own perspective when I can. Before we jump in, I have to remind you that I'm not an attorney or a therapist, so if you're in a bad place and you need some more than a good story to help you get out of it, please seek qualified and licensed professional guidance from an attorney or a therapist. And as always, if you have a crazy divorce story and you never get around to writing your book, so you'd like to share the story on our show instead, visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button at the bottom of the page. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, now that's done. Let's jump in the story. Tom grew up in Bountiful, Utah, just 15 minutes north of Salt Lake City. Like the majority of Utahns, the Milligans were a very devoutly Mormon family. Tom covered a lot of that, of the Mormon stuff, in a previous episode called Missionary Isn't Always Boring. So we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about the church. Tom has four older brothers and one younger sister.
I like to say that I had a charmed life. I was never beaten. I was never hurt by my parents. My brothers and I were very close. My little sister and I fought like cats and dogs, but we love each other in our own way. I think that by and large, we just had a wonderful life. Our parents loved each other. My dad worshiped the ground my mom walked on. She did pass away about 5 or 6 years ago. My dad is still hanging on. He's a trooper. He just turned 90 years old.
Tom's parents owned a commercial lighting company, but they all knew there wasn't a lot of extra money. Every one of his older brothers had started working as early as possible to take some of the burden off their parents. Tom continued this tradition.
I started at McDonald's when I was like 12 years old, not cooking or anything like that, but my older brothers worked there. And so I got a job, you know, cleaning up the outside, painting stuff, kind of maintenance work. And, you know, not that a 12-year-old is really good at it, but it really did teach me a lot about hard work and work ethic. And, you know, I've been working ever since.
At one point, there were four Milligan boys working at that same McDonald's. If you're watching this on YouTube, I've included a couple of pictures from those days at McDonald's, including one of Tom and his brother Dave, who will come up later in our story.
I stayed at McDonald's, actually, until I was 19 years old and then left for a couple of years and came back and ended up working there for another couple of years. And I will tell you, say what you want about working at McDonald's, but it does teach a lot of skills. But that's where I found most of my friends. In fact, my closest friends to this day are the guys that I worked with at McDonald's. And in fact, that's where I met most of the girls that I dated. I only went out with a couple of girls from my school, but I went out with lots of girls that I met at McDonald's. Maybe they just liked the uniform, polyester.
I can promise you it wasn't the polyester, Tom. As Tom said earlier, he led a pretty term life, and he gives a lot of credit to his parents and the goals they set for their family from the start.
When my parents first got married, back in the dark ages, they obviously had no idea how many children they were going to have, let alone how many of them were going to be boys, but they wrote a list of goals for their children or their family. And again, not knowing how many kids they were going to have, they had no idea what they were setting themselves up for, but one of the goals is that they wanted each of their sons, to be Eagle Scouts. Again, they didn't know they were going to have five sons, so that was an awful lot of work for my mom, mainly, especially with me. I was the one who didn't really give a crap about scouting. My older brothers all seemed to really get into it. But I often say that my mom got my Eagle Scout for me, but it has my name on it. So yes, I'm an Eagle Scout.
I've known Tom for 15, 16 years now, and I can tell you that he's a great man. He's definitely his own person with a strong will, but it doesn't surprise me at all that he's also an Eagle Scout. Growing up as a young man in the Mormon Church, and especially in the Milligan household, you're almost expected to serve a mission for the church. We've all seen the guys in the white shirts and the name tags riding their bikes, right? When Tom was 19, he started his 2-year mission.
I left on my mission, and I enjoyed literally every minute of that 2 years. And even though I'm not a practicing Mormon anymore, I loved every minute of it and don't regret any part of it. It was probably the greatest learning experience I've ever had, from a sales perspective, from learning how to get along with other people, to understanding other belief systems and accepting other belief systems. So I wouldn't trade it for the world. But like I said, I was there for 2 years. I served a mission in Southern California. I spoke Spanish. So yeah, I am relatively fluent in Spanish, even though my vocabulary is dwindling. It's been 35 years since I went on my mission.
I didn't know this until recently, but Tom's mission included my hometown of Laguna Beach. So it's possible that he rode his bike past my childhood home. That's crazy. Tom made a decision in seventh grade that college wasn't for him. He knew that meant he'd just have to work harder to get ahead in life, but he decided early on that that was worth it. So when he returned from his 2-year mission, he started working hard. In fact, at one point, he had 3 full-time jobs, sometimes sleeping for an hour or two in his car between jobs, living out of a suitcase, and showering in the gym provided at one of his jobs. One of those jobs was in a call center as a customer service representative. Little did he know that he'd fall in love with the industry and spend the next 31 years building a stellar reputation and becoming an industry leader in the contact center space.
I ended up meeting my first wife at work. I worked for a day planner company. And for our younger, for the younger listeners, back when I was 20 years old, everybody carried around these actual paper day planners. They were just big half sheet calendars, and I can't even believe that they became so popular. But that's where I actually started my career in the contact center industry. I didn't think I was going to be in it for 30 years. But anyway, so Franklin Quest was the name of the company when we met, or when we got married. And we actually had our wedding reception in the Franklin building. We were kind of that Franklin couple, so why not? And it was cheap. They gave it to us, I think, for $50 just for a cleaning fee. So it was a really, it was a fine wedding. Everything was great.
Sounds nice. But we're on my crazy divorce, so we know it doesn't end up that way. So what's the deal?
And I never really talk about this marriage because, quite frankly, she's a wonderful woman. She's an incredible mother to our 3 sons. But we should have never gotten married. That's the divorce I should talk about, because that one took $40,000 and took 19 months of my life to complete. It was crazy in the sense that I joke about it, but as far as I can recall, the only thing I actually, you know, put air quotes around this, the only thing I actually won in that divorce was a blender. And it's not a very good blender. I certainly don't have it anymore. But it was a stupid divorce. And I probably should talk about that one, but quite honestly, it has been so long, I don't even remember the details, so it would be pretty much what I just said. It took 19 months, cost 40 grand, I got a blender.
$40,000 and 18 months? I know this was 20 years ago, and he says he doesn't remember many details, but I needed more.
I actually made some incredible offers. Believe it or not, I actually offered to sign over every other paycheck until the kids were 18. And I thought that was a good idea. I mean, what more could she want? That is like the truest sense of 50-50, right?
Wow, that was a 50-50 offer. What more could she ask? Now I'm really wondering, what cost you the $40,000?
She came back with, I'm going to take you for everything. 50-50 is not even close to what I'm going to get you for, or something like that, which forced me to defend myself, which is why it took 19 months and cost $40,000. And I will tell you that she got far less than every other paycheck until the kids were 18.
How many times have we heard on this show alone that one party, usually the wife, thinks they're going to get more than their husband offered, only to get a lot less? Why do we keep doing that to ourselves, ladies? In 2002, very shortly after the 18-month-long divorce process was finalized, Tom remarried.
Just a few months later, I married again. I was at a new company, of course, and I met this woman. Her name is Trinity, at least that's the name that I call her. And Trinity and I got married in 2002, April of 2002. And it was a really interesting marriage right from the get-go. It was very highly charged sexually right from the beginning. We were like rabbits.
Sounds like a lot of fun, right? When they got married, Tom was working for a company called InContact that pioneered cloud-based contact center technology and remains the industry leader to this day. From day one, Trinity wanted to work for InContact. So 4 to 5 years into their marriage, the planets aligned and Trinity started working for InContact as a product manager. So Tom and Trinity worked together at InContact for the next 11 to 12 years. It was at about this time that I was starting my first company called Frontline Call Center, and we needed contact center technology. I met Tom as part of the sales and deployment process, and we've been best friends ever since. So Tom and Trinity are working together and are happily married. They know all the same people and have a lot of the same friends from work. It's a very close-knit company.
She knew all of my coworkers. I knew all her coworkers. We worked for the same company. So here we are working, not quite together, but at least for the same company for years. And we had been married for about 14 years. And during that 14 years, like a lot of marriages, or at least I'm told, a lot of marriages, the sex decreased. So it wasn't happening like it was at the beginning, which I expected and accepted. However, it was to the point where instead of, you know, several times a week, it went to once every few weeks. And say what you will, that doesn't make me happy. Made me feel unwanted, unattractive, made me feel like she didn't care about me.
I hear a lot of men with similar stories. Some of them feel like it was almost a bait and switch. Lots of sex early on and then nothing. I think I'd feel the same. But most men won't share their feelings like Tom does. If you're married and listening to this, you should probably ask yourself if you've fallen into a rut. So Tom is feeling unwanted, unattractive, and unappreciated. Not a good list of feelings.
Of course, all of the women listening right now are saying, well, you should have helped more around the house, or you should have, tried to be more romantic. You can ask Trinity. This was not about acts of service. This was not about helping more around the house. This wasn't about, you know, being romantic. We had a wonderful dating life together. I mean, we went out all the time. We did all of the things that everybody recommends to help her be in the mood more. But it seemed like everything we tried to do caused more problems.
I've known Tom for a long time. I've spent time in his home, and I know he's more than just helpful. He does whatever he can to shoulder most of the household chores. It's something his dad instilled in all of the 5 sons. At some point, Tom suggests therapy or counseling.
We didn't do therapy, which is something I will regret for the rest of my life, probably. I suggested we see a counselor to talk about our sex life and anything else that we needed to, and she said, nope, I've been to therapy before. All they're going to tell us to do is run a bath and put rose petals and light some candles. And so she said, we're not going to do that because we've tried all of that.
I guess that's not happening. Thanks for nothing, Trinity. In May of 2016, InContact was purchased by a large multinational corporation based in Israel. Both Tom and Trinity had dealings with the parent company, but Trinity's involvement was much greater early on since she was asked to integrate their product lines. 8 months after the merger, Tom was working from home and gets a call from Trinity.
In February of 2017, early February, she calls me up. I'm working from home. I was in sales, so I worked from home because I was traveling all the time. She worked in the office in Salt Lake City. She calls me up on a Wednesday afternoon, like 4 or 5 o'clock, and she says, hey, Tom, you're not going to believe this. I have to go to Israel this coming Friday. And I said, wow, this Friday? Like, what time? And I think her flight left at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So she said, I need your help to get ready for this trip. Okay, what can I do? She said, well, my old suitcase is not going to do it for me, her carry-on thing. So she said, I've already called Macy's or whatever it was and ordered this Tumi bag. Do you think you can go pick it up for me?
Tom springs into action. He drops what he's doing to pick up her new suitcase and spends the next 36 hours helping her get ready and pack her things. I don't know if I'll ever understand why it takes some people a day and a half to pack for a trip, but apparently she's one of them. So Friday afternoon comes.
I drop her off at the airport and off she goes. And she's with 6 or 7 people from the company. Every one of them I know. 2 or 3 days into it, she catches a cold. So we're on the phone and you can just hear the drainage. You can just hear and feel just the congestion. But she sounded horrible. She felt horrible, but she still had to do the work. It's just what you got to do when you do business travel. She's sleeping as much as she can, but she's sick. And that, you know, it's getting worse and worse every single day.
Being sick is awful, but being sick on a business trip in a foreign country, no thanks. But after the week finally comes to an end, she's still sick and has to travel for 16 hours. Tom goes to the airport, and this comes as no surprise to anyone that knows him. He shows up with flowers.
So she comes down the escalator, and I'm going to tell you, she looked like hell. And I just felt so bad. She'd been traveling for 14 hours. She was sick as a dog. I hand her the flowers. She's trying to be gracious, and she says, thanks. That's all she said. So I get her luggage, and we go out to the car, and we go home.
As soon as they get home, Tom helps her get her stuff inside. She takes some NyQuil and goes straight to bed. So there's Tom at 8:30 on a Friday night with a sick wife upstairs, asleep, and nothing to do but keep the dogs quiet so she can rest. What he does next isn't surprising at all to me.
So there's her suitcase sitting there. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to do all the laundry. That way this is a Friday. We have all day Saturday. Hopefully she wakes up feeling a little bit better. We can have our Saturday together and do whatever, you know, go shopping, you know, whatever you normally do on a Saturday. So I gather all the laundry and I open up her suitcase because, again, it was just sitting right next to me. I open up her suitcase and start pulling out dirty laundry. But amongst her clothing, I find two or three pieces actually, but I remember this one very sexy piece or set of lingerie. I pull it out of the suitcase and I'm looking at it going, what the hell is this?
What the hell is right? Tom first thought that maybe she'd left it packed from a previous trip they'd been on together. But then he remembered 9 days earlier, he'd just picked up the suitcase and he'd helped her pack it. It wasn't for him.
So I literally, you know, kind of put it like next to me on the couch, on the back of the couch, and just sat there and looked at it. I feel like I stared at it for 20 or 30 minutes. It may have only been a few minutes. I don't know. But I sat there just looking at this piece of lingerie thinking, what in the fuck just happened? My entire life just changed.
I can just picture my friend sitting on the couch, staring at the lingerie, trying to conjure up any reasonable explanation for the lingerie being in the suitcase. But after nearly an hour, he'd come up empty. He wanted answers.
I picked up the lingerie and I walked upstairs to our bedroom. I turned on the light and I said, "What the fuck is this?"
I don't blame him at all. Those are questions that can't wait until the morning.
You know, according to Benjamin Franklin, nothing is certain but death and taxes. Well, if he saw the divorce rate in our country, he'd probably add that to the list too. But speaking of taxes, I'm old enough to remember life before you could do your taxes online. We had two options way back then: do it yourself or hire an accountant. Now, most of us didn't really need an accountant, but we weren't comfortable doing our own taxes, so we hired an accountant. What a waste. The sad thing is that until now, divorce had those exact same options. You could do your own divorce, or you could hire an attorney. Most divorcing couples don't really need an attorney, but they're not comfortable doing their own divorce, so they end up hiring attorneys. What a waste. But that's all in the past. OurDivorce.com has brought the divorce process out of the dark ages and into the light. Just go to OurDivorce.com and click on Get Started. It costs you nothing unless the process works for you, and even then, it's only $299. So you really have nothing to lose. But if you think an attorney is the best option, get up out of your Barca lounger, pause Matlock on your VCR, get that sweet flip phone out of your fanny pack, and give them a call. I suggest you check your bank balance first, though, because it's going to cost you. Either way, I hope you're enjoying the show.
Now picture the scene. Tom has just gone into their bedroom, turned on the light, and while she was still in half a sleep state, asks why there's lingerie in her suitcase. Personally, I think when you're in that state of mind where you've just been awakened, you're kind of in that half-awake state. That's when your true colors shine through because you're not conscious enough to put up a front. So what are Trinity's true colors?
So what she says is, "You went through my things?" And I'm just sitting there going, are you shitting me? I'm holding a piece of lingerie that almost proves that you have been screwing around. And instead of addressing the elephant in the room, you try to deflect and blame and put it onto me for going through your things. You've got to be kidding me.
Trinity did her best to deflect, but she was caught and she knew it. So a few minutes later, she fessed up. But since deflection hadn't worked, she went to the next tool in her kit. Minimization.
She finally fessed up and said, "Yes, yes, I have been having an affair. It doesn't mean anything. It's just sex. Like, that's supposed to make me feel better."
Tom was pretty sure he knew who she was sleeping with, but he needed to know for sure. Trinity confirmed who it was: a married coworker. He also learned that she wasn't really needed in Israel and that her boyfriend pulled some strings so she could be there. They had sex 3 times that week while she was sick.
I mean, I was just crushed. Anybody who's ever been in this situation knows, you know, that's a knife to the heart. And especially given our non-sexual relationship that we've had for 10 years. I mean, for 10 years, we had more or less just agreed to disagree on the whole frequency of sex. In my brain, I'm going, wait a minute, she won't do me, but she'll do him?
Tom is crushed. Adrenaline is pulsing. He's a bundle of nervous energy. So he's pacing in the hall outside their bedroom, just trying to wrap his brain around the fact that his entire world was crashing all around him. He fell to his knees crying. As he knelt, he made a very important decision.
I kind of had a vision in my head. Call it a vision, a dream, whatever. In your head, I had this as clear as day. I could see myself going down a road, and there were a fork, two-way fork in the road. One side was this dark, dreary, horrible city, and the other was a beautiful, well-lit city, beautiful, happy, green, verdant, blah, blah, blah. And in my mind's eye, somehow I knew that the dark one was life without Trinity. The light one was life with Trinity. So I made the decision, and it only took 5 minutes of finding this all out that I forgave her.
I don't know how he was able to do that, but that's Tom. But before he could let her know he'd forgiven her, he had one question.
Do you love him? And she said, no, it's just sex. It has nothing to do with emotions. Which, by the way, I don't understand that. I know that there are a lot of guys, especially guys, probably a lot of women too, but there are a lot of guys who just, you know, they can go and screw around and not have any feelings. I don't understand that. She fell to her knees and literally put her hands up here on my chest. She's going like this on my chest saying, Tom, please forgive me. I will end it right now. I will cut it off. It will never happen again. I love you. I want to be with you. And with that, I let her know that I had forgiven her.
Wouldn't it be great if these two could pull this off? You think? Experts disagree on how much information should be shared by the cheater and how much the victim should ask. Tom didn't consult with any experts, but he needed some answers.
I learned that they did it in the office. And then they did it in her car. They did it in our bed while I was traveling for work. And when I found that out, I will tell you, I jumped up off that mattress and said, well, never going to sit on this mattress again. And I didn't. So like the very next day we went out and got a new mattress. And I know that seems silly to some people, but for some reason that was a big deal for me. But I also think it was really interesting. We lived in a gated community. And the fact is, for him to get in there, he had our gate code. And that felt more invasive than anything.
Trinity was fighting a cold, jet lag, and night bowl, and couldn't keep her eyes open. So that had to be it for the night. At that point, Trinity has been seeing a therapist named Julie for about 6 months, which is just about as long as she'd been sleeping with Chris. Coincidence? Not a chance. Tom called Julie Saturday morning, explained what had happened, and asked if she'd see them as a couple. With Trinity's blessing and a signed waiver of doctor-patient privilege, Julie agreed to see them as a couple, just one time, and to help them find a good couples counselor.
One of the things that Julie said when in that one session that we had with her was, she said, Tom, you are too close to the situation, so you need to find some support, and it cannot be Trinity. And she said, Trinity, you can't rely on Tom for your support. You need to have outside support. And she said, Tom, Trinity already has me, Julie, the therapist. She knew that Trinity had been talking to her friends. All of her friends and her sister knew all about the affair, and they had known since literally the beginning. And of course, that makes you feel like an idiot too. So she said, so Trinity has her support system. Who do you have? And I said, oh, well, my brother's my best friend, so I'm going to call him. Trinity goes, oh, no, don't call Dave. He'll hate me.
Don't you love how she made Tom's need for support all about her?
Why I agreed to that, I will never know. But that right there was the single biggest mistake I made. The biggest mistake was not forgiving her. The biggest mistake was letting her dictate the terms of that forgiveness.
If not his brother, who?
I said, okay, I won't call Dave. So I'm going to call my best friend at the time. His name was Marco. And she goes, oh, no, don't call Marco because he works at the same company, and he'll tell everybody.
Trinity, this is supposed to be about Tom's needs.
So after literally going through a list of like 8 or 10 people, the only guy that I could come up with that didn't work with us and wasn't part of my family was a friend of ours named Sean, who happens to be a therapist. He's not my therapist or anything, but he is a therapist. And she said, yeah, Sean's perfect. So I called Sean, and he met me for dinner, and he was wonderful, and that was the last time we spoke. He's a good guy, but he's got other things going on in his life. He's not invested in my recovery. So other than that one session that Sean and I had together, I was all alone.
My heart breaks for Tom because I was one of those friends he couldn't call. but his willingness to squash his feelings just shows how much he loved her and wanted to save the marriage. It's just not fair.
I never told my brother Dave or anyone else in my family. I never told any of my friends. So I carried her sins on my shoulders. And quite frankly, that's unfair. And anybody who's had an affair should not even ask, let alone expect their spouse, the victim of their infidelity, to put up with it and agree to not tell everybody. If you don't want the world to know that you're a shitty person, don't be a shitty person.
I totally agree. It's not your spouse's responsibility to hide your bad acts from the world. With Julie's help, Tom and Trinity start with a couples counselor who they see for a few months.
The one thing that I remember this counselor said is that she likened a marriage to a glass ball, you know, like those old glass balls you see in fishing nets and stuff like that. She said that glass ball has been thrown on the ground. Trinity threw it on the ground when she had an affair and it broke into a million pieces. What we're doing now is we're trying to put it back together. And quite frankly, it will never be the same. And that's okay. And glue joints are actually stronger than the original. This concept of this putting this ball back together is that the pieces, when you glue them together, if they're done right, it will actually become stronger than it used to be. It will never be the same, and you will always see the cracks. You'll always know that it was there, but it will be just as strong or stronger than it was if you do it correctly. And that's what we clung to.
Over the next couple of years, Tom did everything he could to rebuild and strengthen the marriage. If you've ever attended one of his live events, you may have heard him say that things like this never hurt any less, but they do hurt less often. In the early days, Tom couldn't even close his eyes without seeing a vision of Trinity and Chris having sex in Tom's own bedroom. Over time, those visuals dimmed, and he would go days without a trigger, then weeks, then months. His reaction to those triggers also became less severe, but some triggers hurt worse than others.
One of the more famous reminders that I've done a TikTok about is that about a year and a half after I found out about her affair, we were watching Nurse Jackie. And if you don't know that show, in the show, Nurse Jackie is obviously the main character. She's a nurse. And she was having an affair with a coworker. She had a wonderful family, husband, kids at home. And it was so painful to see that, because it hits so close to home. We're just sitting there watching it, and I started tearing up. Now, I wasn't sitting there like, oh, I can't believe this, and I can't believe you did this. I didn't bring it up. I just had a tear running down my cheek. And apparently she saw it in the reflection from the TV, or I don't know. Somehow she noticed that I had a tear running down my cheek. And she paused the show first. She didn't want to miss the show. She paused it, turned to look at me and said, Tom, when are you going to grow up and get over it? It happens.
I should let you know at this point, even though I've known Trinity for almost as long as I've known Tom, we were never friends, or really even very friendly. She's not a very friendly person. I never understood how Tom and Trinity could even be together. But from the outside, it all seemed perfect. Everyone wanted their relationship. But hearing this story really makes me angry. So while we were never friends before, I really liked her less now.
In hindsight, it's 2020. I should have left. But I didn't. I loved her. And so we soldiered on.
Even knowing Tom and how much he loved her, I'm shocked that he stayed after this. Fast forward another year or so. It's February 2019 in Las Vegas. Tom and Trinity have left in contact and are working for a competitor. The entire sales organization, along with a few others, are at the annual sales kickoff. That's where company leaders teach the sales organization about new product updates, how to sell, and how to beat the competition.
There were probably 200 people in the room, 250 people, and they had all of the speakers on the front row. So whoever was speaking that day was going to be on the front row. So we started the day. I was on the front row because I was going to be a speaker. Trinity was sitting right next to me, not because she was speaking, but because we were married. And on the stage was a group of four or five guys who had all left one of our competitors and were now working for this company. And they were going to go up there and have a panel discussion on how to beat a competitor. One of them was a guy I'd never seen before. I didn't know who he was until they made introductions. Now, I learned later, much later, that this guy, his name, his pseudonym, what I call him, his name is Steve. So Steve was sitting on the stage, and he doesn't know anybody. It's literally his first day. His first day at the company was at the sales kickoff, and he sees Trinity. Now, Trinity's a beautiful woman. Not going to lie, not going to say anything negative about her looks, because she's a beautiful woman. And Steve noticed Trinity, and he elbows the guy next to him, a guy named Chuck, and says, "Dude, who's the hot chick on the front row?" Now, Chuck looks around, and Trinity happened to be the only woman on the front row, so it was easy to narrow down the hot chicks. And he goes, "Oh, that's Trinity Milligan. You see the big guy next to her? That's her husband, Tom." And now, Steve, instead of that being a wake-up call for him to say, "Oh, I'm married, therefore I shouldn't pursue this," he said, "Oh, she's married? I guess I'll have to go about this a different way." What a douche. So that was Steve.
Steve is gross. But remember, Tom and Trinity didn't know about that interaction until months later. Tom has no idea this douche is plotting ways to sleep with his wife. And neither did Trinity.
And over the next two or three days of the sales kickoff, I talked to him a few times, and we ended up working together on several projects. And he seemed like a nice enough guy, kind of off, but a nice enough guy.
At this point, Trinity had set up weekly one-on-one Zoom meetings with 10 to 12 people throughout the organization. With Steve on board, Trinity added him to the rotation. So every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Mountain Time, Trinity and Steve would have their weekly call, just like the calls she had set up with the other 10 to 12 people. Tom and Trinity lived in Salt Lake City in a brand new home they designed and had built from the ground up. Steve lived just outside Philadelphia with his wife of 14 years. Tom and Steve were on a call one day that summer, 4 to 5 months after the sales kickoff, when Steve let Tom know that he was actually at one of the ski resorts in the mountains east of Salt Lake at a conference.
When I found out he was in Salt Lake, I said, "Hey, what are you doing in Salt Lake?" And he was up at one of the ski resorts speaking at some conference. And I said, "Well, if you have time, we should get together." And he goes, "You got it. When?" Like, without any hesitation. I said, "I don't know. What are you doing tonight?" And he goes, "I'll be there." And he just seemed extremely willing. At the time I was thinking, all right, well, I'm already bored and we're sitting in a hotel room, might as well do this. Well, then I find out, well, this isn't a company expense, and he didn't have a rental car. So he paid $70 each way to Uber from Snowbird to our house in Riverton. So he was willing to drop $140-$150 on an Uber to go to dinner with me. Well, obviously, hindsight being 2020, he didn't give a shit about dinner with me. This was his entree. Because remember, he was going to have to go about it a different way. And Tom just put it right in his lap.
Let's be real. Steve was going to find a way in with or without Tom's help. So Steve drops $140 on an Uber. The three of them go to dinner. Steve comes to their new house and gets a tour. They all shake hands and Steve goes back up to his hotel at Snowbird.
Well, the next morning, he sent a text, not a group text. He didn't send it to Tom and Trinity. He just sent one to Tom that said, "Hey, thanks for dinner. It was great getting to know you guys. Thanks for dinner, blah, blah, blah."
Seems polite. Tom wrote back thanking him for taking the time and expressing similar feelings. Tom had no way of knowing that Steve had sent an identical text to Trinity, or that she'd replied with some information about whatever subject they'd talked about at dinner, or that response would open the floodgates. It was exactly what Steve was waiting for.
Over the next 3 or 4 days, they traded over 1,000 texts. Obviously, I don't know what was in those texts. I just know from the phone records. Then they realized what they were doing, and they switched to WhatsApp.
Now remember, Tom didn't know all these texts were happening. Trinity and Steve were pretty good about keeping them secret, for a while at least. Tom's first clue that something wasn't right was that those 30-minute weekly calls with Steve started taking longer and longer. First, they went from 30 minutes to 60, then to 90, and none of her other meetings changed, and they all have the same agenda. Weird.
I started feeling uncomfortable about it. Remember, this is just 2.5 years after I had found out she'd been screwing another guy. So I was, you know, I'd forgiven her, but that doesn't mean you forget. And so I absolutely was uncomfortable, but I didn't want to be that guy that says she can't have guy friends. And I didn't know exactly what to do about it.
Seriously. Tom's between a rock and a hard place. What could he say? He suppressed his discomfort until a Wednesday in October 2019. His day had ended, so he shut down everything in his home office at about 5:30. As he walked past Trinity's office, he stuck his head in to say hello and noticed that she was still on a Zoom call with Steve. 2.5 hours. Still, he didn't say anything. He went outside to sit on the deck and play with the dogs. An hour later, Trinity finished her Zoom meeting and came out to join Tom on the deck.
She came out onto the deck and she goes, "Hey, how you doing?" And I said, "To be honest, Trinity, I'm just sitting here trying not to be jealous."
I think that's a great way to handle it. What else could he say? But Trinity doesn't agree with me.
And she goes, "What the fuck, Tom? You don't get to choose my friends anymore." What? When did I choose your friends? Oh, you made me break it off with Chris. So her being on her hands and knees, holding her hands up and put them on my chest, saying, please forgive me, I'll break it off, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's now all my fault. So again, she's projecting this onto me. I said, "You volunteered to break it off with Chris, and that was a condition of our staying together. So I didn't choose your friends. And as far as this goes, I didn't say anything. I said, I'm trying not to be jealous, but clearly I should be jealous if you're going to react this defensively."
As you can imagine, the Milligan household wasn't a very pleasant place that night or the next day. On Friday, Trinity told Tom she just needed space and time to think.
I packed up and moved out Friday at noon. I went to the Ramada Inn, room 116 at the Ramada Inn in Draper, Utah. And it was probably the lowest day of my life. I didn't think it could get any lower until I went out Saturday morning to Walmart to buy microwavable meals. And I just remember pushing this cart around Walmart crying.
This seriously breaks my heart. Tom is my friend.
Now, looking back, I now understand what she needed was space and time to plan her exit. But she said she needed space because she wanted to work it out with me. That's bullshit. She had no intention of working it out with me. None. So, I was an idiot for several weeks.
Tom was doing everything he could to save the marriage, while Trinity was just planning her exit and giving him false hope. After 4 weeks, on November 7th, 2019, after a quick phone call between Tom and Trinity, Tom's eyes were opened. He knew in his heart that it was over.
Well, that's when I wrote up a plan. Since I had been divorced 19, 20 years earlier, and it cost me so much time and money, I thought, you know what, I don't want to do that again. And I have a lot more to lose this time. So I wrote up a plan. It's a 12-page document that I still have, of course. And I said, if we can work together one last time, we will find a way to not pay attorneys and not spend so much money.
Having a plan helped him feel better, but he was still hopeful. Trinity traveled to Portugal for business the following week and asked Tom to spend that week at their home to take care of the dogs. She also agreed that when she returned home, that they would stay in the home together and work on their marriage. She got home on Saturday, November 23rd, just a few days before Thanksgiving. Trinity spent several hours on Zoom calls with Steve over that weekend, and then Monday night came.
It was 2 days before Thanksgiving, 2019. It was a Monday night, and she said, "We're done. We're not going to be together anymore." I said, "Okay, hold on." I grabbed my laptop, and I put it in front of her, and I said, "Will you please look over this project plan and see what you think?" And she goes, "Holy crap, where'd you find this?" I said, "Oh, I made it up." She said, "Let's do it." So 48 hours later, our divorce was ready to file with the courts.
Well, that was easy. Once that was out of the way, Trinity let Tom know that Steve was moving to Salt Lake City. And then on Thanksgiving morning, she announced that she was moving to Philadelphia instead.
And so for the next month, we lived in the same house, and she started packing her shit, getting ready to go to Philadelphia to live with her boyfriend. And I helped her. I helped her pack three pods, you know, those storage things, three of those with Christmas decorations and every other decoration she'd bought over the years, plus more than half of our furniture, which was fine. I didn't care. I'm not a things guy. I got to keep most of my tools. You know, we worked it out in my plan. It was already worked out. So as soon as the plan was signed off on, there was no fighting. There was nothing.
I've heard this part of the story a few times, and I'm still amazed at all Tom did to get her ready for her drive to leave him. He's a really good man.
Steve flew in on December 26th from Philadelphia. He landed, I think, at about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. They went to a hotel that night and then drove to Philadelphia starting Tuesday morning. I think it was Tuesday, whatever the 27th was that year. I think it was a Tuesday. And they drove all week, and they are living together. They bought a house together. He is still married. Hasn't even filed for divorce. But whatever. But they're together. So that's my divorce story. The judge signed the paperwork on February 14th, Valentine's Day, which I'm assuming he did as a joke. But so our divorcery is Valentine's Day, which I think is absolutely hilarious.
I'm so glad Tom didn't spend $40,000 on attorneys and that they were able to get through their part in just 48 hours. That's the way to do it. If you follow Tom on TikTok, you know that he's recently gone through a pretty rough breakup. He still believes in love and hopes to find his person someday. Infidelity is a form of abuse, and Tom was a victim twice. He blamed himself for years, but he's learned that's a mistake. He's learned that cheating is always the fault of the cheater. It bears no reflection on their victim.
I recognize now, but at the time I didn't know this. And so anybody listening that finds themselves in this situation, please know, when your partner has an affair, it's not for the sex. It's for the excitement. It's for the thrill. It's an adrenaline rush. It's something new. It's just a change.
That's a great lesson. But he ended our interview with some advice he's trying to learn and follow in his own life right now.
Take it slow. There's no hurry. Life is long. I know everybody says life is short, but you know what? Life is the longest thing you'll ever do. It takes longer. It costs more. Life takes a long time. So don't be in such a hurry to get married like I was. Just learn how to be yourself.
That's great advice for all of us. Love yourselves, everyone. Be sure to watch this episode on YouTube to see some of the pictures we've shared. We'll also share them on social media. Thanks to all of you that have left a review for the show. People find our show when you review us and when you share the show with your friends. So if you haven't done so already, please take 2 seconds right now to give us 5 stars on whatever platform or app you're using right now to listen to this show. And if you've already done that, please take 2 seconds to share the show with at least one friend. I also want to thank OurDivorce.com for their sponsorship of My Crazy Divorce. If you or someone you know is thinking of divorce and one of them isn't being difficult, go to OurDivorce.com to learn more or to get started for free. If you've already been through a crazy divorce and want to share your story with the world, please go to MyCrazyDivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button at the bottom of the page. We'd love to hear your story. And finally, a big thank you to Tom for sharing his story with us. That's our show for today. I've had a lot of fun, but Tom will be back next week with another crazy episode. Bye.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good, oh, the possibility. possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.